Hi, thank you all for inviting me, and thanks to the organizers in particular for also inviting me. It's really a pleasure to be here. And I'll apologize in advance for doing my presentation in English, but you'll have to trust me that you wouldn't want to hear me try it in French. So, let's get started. So I'm going to talk about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act in the United States. It was passed in 1998, so we've had 5 years now, basically, of experience of how the enforcement of this law has taken place in the U.S. We found out that it chills freedom of expression and scientific research, restricts private copying rights, prevents interoperability, it impedes competition, creates monopolies, and it creates a chokehold on innovation. So what are these DMCA anti-circumvention measures? Well, what this does is outlaws the circumvention of technological restrictions that are used to protect copyrighted works. What's important in the U.S. is that it applies to your own property even when you have a lawful right. So if you bought a DVD and you own that DVD and you want to bypass those technological restrictions in order to play your DVD on your computer, your operating system, whatever, it's against the law to do that, even on your own property. Section 1201 of the DMCA in the U.S. Does two basic things. It bans the act of circumvention, the act of actually bypassing these technological restrictions, and it also bans, it outlaws tools that include software, it includes technical information that could help someone to circumvent these technological restrictions. So how does the DMCA fit in with the overall international intellectual property laws? Well, WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, they call it OMPI here, has the Copyright Treaty and the Performances and Phonograms Treaty that deal with the circumvention of technological restrictions. In these treaties, it says that countries must provide adequate legal protection and effective legal remedies against the circumvention of technological restrictions. So the DMCA was touted by its authors as what the U.S. needed to do in order to comply with its WIPO treaty obligations. But in fact, that's not true. The DMCA went much, much, much further than WIPO requires of countries. For example, a ban on legitimate consumer circumvention was not required by the WIPO treaties. Banning all of the tools that are necessary in order to engage in circumvention is not required by the WIPO treaties. This is something you don't hear very often, but you know, you don't have to take my word for it. You can read it yourself in the treaty. So what we're seeing now is basically this maximalist U.S. agenda being exported overseas. The Bush administration in particular is pressing for these maximal rights that go to the giant corporations. They're not something that the authors are actually benefiting from. There are no moral rights, for example. That's not something that the U.S. is pushing for in its agenda. So the DMCA Plus, as we're calling them, because they're much, much more broadly banning than the DMCA, it's being pushed in these international treaties and trade agreements by the Bush administration. For example, the EU Copyright Directive, the national implementations of this are going on all throughout Europe right now. That includes bans on circumvention of technological restrictions. The EU IP Enforcement Directive, which we'll hear more about soon, also bans circumvention. The Free Trade Area of the Americas Treaty, that's a treaty that is currently under negotiation amongst all 34 countries in the Western Hemisphere, basically North America, South America, the Caribbean, Central America, everyone, all the countries except for Cuba. And this this treaty is set to take effect in 2005, and it includes provisions that are even broader than the DMCA and, again, broader than WIPO in terms of what countries are obligated to outlaw. So let's go back to the DMCA experience in the U.S. We talked about that it chills freedom of expression and scientific research. Well, there was a case a couple years ago where the Princeton professor Felton and his research team were they agreed to participate in the SDMI hack challenge, where basically the music industry said, "See if you can hack this technology." This was the technology they were working on to control digital music, and Professor Felton and his team downloaded the software. They participated in this challenge, and they tested they tested it. And what they discovered was that it was remarkably weak, and it would be cracked upon its immediate introduction into the marketplace. And Professor Felton felt like the public had a right to know this, that the artists who were being asked to who were being told that this technology is going to protect your interests had a right to know this. Well, so they wrote a paper. The research team wrote a paper, and it was getting ready to be presented at a technical conference when they got a threat letter from the RIAA under the DMCA, threatening litigation if these researchers were to go ahead and present this paper at this technical conference that revealed the weaknesses in their technology. Well, you know, that's kind of a scary thing to get a threat letter from the RIAA. So these researchers decided to pull their presentation. And it wasn't only the researchers who got the threat letter. It was also the organizers of the conference and the universities that the researchers all worked for were all threatened with DMCA liability if they were to go ahead and give this paper. So it was pulled. There was a tremendous public backlash against this. The scientists were really upset. The public was really upset that this paper was being pulled. So a lawsuit was filed on behalf of these scientists asking that the court declare they've got a First Amendment right, a freedom of speech right, to present this paper and talk about the vulnerabilities of this technology. Well, the RIAA was looking pretty bad at this point, and they had a black eye, and they decided to withdraw the lawsuit, drop the lawsuit, and so that the case ended up going away. But you can see the kind of chill that is created by these kinds of circumvention laws. More recently, a Princeton student was threatened by a company called Suncom because he revealed that holding down the shift key breaks the security. So he got a threat letter from this company under the DMCA saying, "We're going to sue you. You are hurting our ability to recoup our investment. And so, you know, we're going to file a lawsuit against you under the DMCA." Well, another public outcry, and the company agreed to back off a little bit. But again, you can see the kind of chilling effect that this law is having on scientific and technical speech. Okay, so thank you. So what's the result of this? Well, it's chilling freedom of expression, and it's chilling scientific research. There are researchers that are afraid to publish. They are choosing alternative fields of study because they're afraid that if they were to reveal some of these weaknesses, they themselves will be prosecuted. Well, what's the end result of this? It actually weakens everyone's public security for these key infrastructures. There are foreign scientists that are issuing statements saying that they're afraid to travel to the United States since the DMCA was passed because they have written software or may have done research which could help someone bypass technological restrictions, and therefore they could find themselves in trouble for traveling to the United States. Technical conferences are moving overseas to jurisdictions where anti-circumvention laws are not yet in place. The state of Russia even issued a travel advisory warning its citizens, particularly its computer programmers, about the dangers of traveling to the United States since the DMCA was passed. Well, we're also seeing that the DMCA is restricting private copying rights. The fair use, fair dealing, typical personal use copying rights that people enjoy are being restricted because these technological restrictions are not permitting people to be able to engage in these private copyings. For example, on DVDs, there's no personal use copying is permitted whatsoever. So even though you may have a lawful right, at least in the U.S., to make backups, archive things, educational uses, the technology prevents you from doing that, and the law prevents you from bypassing the technology. So it has an effect of preventing and restricting your engagement in these lawful activities. CDs are another example, copy-restricted CDs, where you're not able to make personal use copies, copy them onto computers, PCs. These kinds of uses are being restricted, even though you may have a right to engage in these activities. Well, we've also discovered that the DMCA, these anti-circumvention measures, are preventing interoperability. Because in order for technical components to interoperate with each other, they would have to bypass these technological restrictions. And that is considered a circumvention. So you can't build tools that interoperate with each other. For example, there was a case that was filed in the U.S. against Russian software or cryptographer Dmitry Sklarov a couple of years ago, and the company that he worked for, Elcomsoft. They were building software that was interoperable with Adobe eBooks. When Dmitry came to the U.S. to speak at a technical conference about the vulnerabilities of the Adobe system, and he was on his way back to the airport to go back to Russia, he was arrested by the FBI, who had been encouraged to arrest him by Adobe. So Dmitry was charged. He spent 5 weeks in jail without bail. Elcomsoft was eventually charged. Dmitry was facing 25 years in prison for writing software that helps people read books. Sounds like pretty dangerous, doesn't he? Well, that's the law we have on the books. Fortunately, the jury acquitted Elcomsoft last December, and Dmitry was given the charges were dropped against him because of the public outcry and in exchange for his testimony against Elcomsoft, which they never actually used or wanted in the end. Another example of the kind of interoperability that's prevented by these laws is a case, Chamberlain Group v. Skylink. And this has to do with garage door openers. You're probably wondering, what does this have to do with copyright infringement? Well, nothing. But the DMCA is very, very broad and can be used to prevent competition, interoperability, and all sorts of technical components. Well, most recently, the judge rejected this case. This case was filed in U.S. federal court, and the judge denied the DMCA claim. And the judge said, when you buy a garage door opener and you lose it, you're not breaking the law by buying a replacement that interoperates with that system. I mean, it sounds pretty commonsensical to most folks, but not intellectual property attorneys. So, and there's a case that's pending with the ITC on this very same issue between these parties. So we're also seeing that the DMCA is creating monopolies, impeding competition. I'll give you an example of a case that's going on right now in the U.S., Lexmark v. Static Control Components. These are two companies that are competitors of printer toner cartridges. Again, nothing to do with copyright. But the judge enjoined the distribution of these replacement printer toner cartridges that they're trying to say are circumvention devices because the printer toner cartridge bypasses some sort of technological restriction, and therefore when you use an interoperable non-Lexmark toner cartridge, a replacement cartridge, you're in violation of the DMCA. There's a prominent U.S. law professor at Columbia University by the name of Jane Ginsburg. daughter of a Supreme Court justice, who testified in the U.S. Copyright Office hearings this summer about the problem with the breadth of this law. And she said that auto manufacturers, for example, could use the DMCA to prevent someone from purchasing aftermarket or replacement parts, such as tires or windshield wipers. All you need to do is embed a computer chip in there, and you need to have the secret code to access it, and any other way of accessing it's going to be an illegal circumvention. So we're creating monopolies over these printer toner cartridges and garage door openers, because this law is so broad in the kind of devices that it outlaws. So the upshot is this is stifling innovation as well. For example, there was a case about a year ago where Sony threatened a programmer who was making customized programs for this Aibo pet dog, they called it. This programmer made these programs for no profit. There was no commercial or financial incentive. They didn't distribute the source code, the crack, or anything. They just wanted to be able to build these voice recognition computer programs that their pet dogs would respond to. Well, the public pressure convinced Sony to withdraw this particular threat, but only in exchange for agreeing to turn over all the commercial rights to the program, to Sony, which was fine for these programmers. They were not looking to make a business here. They were just wanting to innovate and to see what cool new things they could do with their toys. Another case in the U.S., Vivendi Universal, Blizzard's Entertainment, sued a bunch of volunteer game developers. The BNet org folks to bar the publication of a program that they were writing. What they had done was they reverse engineered a Blizzard game, and they were trying to figure out, they were trying to make their own server where they could play games with each other over the internet outside of the Universal games or the Universal servers. But again, they were sued under the DMCA. So there's been some backlash in the U.S. People are beginning to wake up and go, what did we pass? What were we thinking back in 1998? And there are some efforts to repeal this law. For example, U.S. Congressman Richard Boucher has put forth the Digital Media Consumers Rights Act, the DMCRA. What this would do, it's currently pending in Congress, is it would permit circumvention for private copying, for example, fair use. This bill would also permit circumvention for security research purposes. There's another bill that's currently pending in the U.S. Congress that was put forth by U.S. Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren from California. And this bill is called the Benefit Authors Without Limiting Advancement of Net Consumer Expectations Act, or they call it the Balance Act for short. another bill that's currently pending to amend the DMCA, but it would permit circumvention only if it was necessary for a non-infringing use and only if the copyright owner does not enable private copying rights in some other way. So it's a little bit more limiting than the Boucher bill. One point that I wanted to raise was the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 19, which guarantees freedom of expression to everyone. This is a particular a law that I think we need to bring some awareness to. We need to start rallying behind that countries that have signed on to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is just about most countries, have already agreed that they are not going to try to restrict someone's expression. And what's particularly interesting about this wording is that it says to receive and impart information and ideas through any medium and regardless of frontiers. So it, I think, particularly speaks to the situation with digital technology, where the copyright holders are trying to say, well, digital's different, you know, you shouldn't have all the rights in the digital world that you have in the analog world. Well, not according to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 19, that most countries have signed on to. So I just wanted to bring some attention to that so we can start using it. So what's the conclusion here? Well, the DMCA's unintended consequences have in fact had a greater impact than the intended consequences. The intended consequence, or the intended effect of the DMCA, was supposed to be to prevent infringement. Well, that hasn't happened. What has happened is chilling freedom of expression and scientific research, restricting the private copyrights, fair use rights, fair dealing rights, personal copying rights, preventing interoperability, creating monopolies, and putting a chokehold on innovation. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. So, any question? Any question for Robin? Yes, sir.
Oui, bonjour. J'ai deux questions. Je m'appelle Kamel Serwal et je suis étudiant à Paris 2 au DESS Audit en informatique. My first question is about DMCA. How the DMCA manage the peer-to-peer networks and like CASA or another one, and the ADSL access. And the other one is there any connection between the new Apple Internet Access Music Store and the DMCA technological restriction?
Well, I didn't quite get the second question, so maybe you can repeat that for me.
Could you tell me the connection between DMCA technological restriction and the new Apple offering Internet Music Store?
iTunes. The iTunes?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not an Apple user myself, so I'm not terribly familiar with it, but I can tell you a little bit about it. They allow people to download songs onto computers, and sometimes these songs come with restrictions and sometimes they don't. And an argument could be made that in the U.S., under U.S. law, someone who were to build a tool that would help someone to engage in fair use of their Apple iTunes music. For example, they want to, you know, they've got a new computer, so they need to switch from one computer to another. So they need to make copies of things and move them from one to another. Maybe the restrictions don't let them. Well, they could be violating the DMCA by bypassing those restrictions or by building tools that could help someone else to bypass those restrictions. So that's a big concern. Your other question had to do with the DMCA and peer-to-peer networks, yes? Well, the DMCA doesn't directly address peer-to-peer, but what it does do is it creates this new subpoena power that grants anyone with an allegation of infringement the right to obtain personal information about that individual. This is something that's unprecedented in U.S. law. Before, you used to have to go to a judge and convince a judge that there's some likelihood of infringement going on before you actually can require the court to turn over personal, or require someone to turn over personal information about someone. But this is another example of the excesses of these overreaching intellectual property laws that are impeding on a whole variety of civil liberties, including due process rights, where you don't get your day in before a court or before your information gets turned over. And so that's another very troubling aspect of the DMCA in the U.S. I'm not familiar with whether or not the French bill has something similar to that, but he's going to talk about that.
The French implementation of the EU Copyright Directive, which Loïc talked about, doesn't. But this new draft directive I'm going to briefly talk about at the end of my presentation does. So.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions? Okay.
When EUCD was in preparation, AOL, Time Warner,
had 20 lawyers working in Brussels to try to influence what was written in it, and basically everything they didn't get in the directive from in this one they have sneaked in the next one that Jan will talk about, apart for the interoperability exception. And there I would like to make a small point of comment on what Loïc has said. In reality, the space is open in the transposition for a relatively strong interoperability exception if you wish to, and you start with the French version, because the French version doesn't say the same thing than the English version. And the French because the English version says you can circumvent if there is a significant commercial usage, which is incredible, because it means if it is not for profit, you cannot. Huh? But the French version says either significant usage or commercial so you could or at least you can interpret like that. It's possible to say that if there is a significant usage, for example a societal usage or the right of a person to access a content legitimately acquired on any device, that could be a significant usage, and that could still protect software like DECSS, let's say, if the legislators decide to do so, of course.
Thank you. Loïc.
I very much agree with what you say. The problem and the reason why we fight against the current implementation of the UCD is not because you could slip through, but because it's not obvious that you could slip through. And a lot of people will be intimidated by that. And the role of the law, at least in the French sense, is to protect the weak against the strong. And apparently it's doing the opposite, so that's why we fight against it.
So what do we want, or what do we
prends un micro.
What do we want? Kill the...
Who do we kill? Who do we shoot? I mean, we don't want that law, whatever the, you know, the implementation could be in our country, in our language, we don't want it. That's what you're saying, right? So what do we do?
The problem is different in every country.
Jean-Bernard Majescas. John Bernard Majescas. Jusqu'à présent, Jean-Bernard Majescas.
The problem is different in every country, and it's different if you want to address it at the European level. But for the French, we proposed an amendment that says that formats, protocols, and encryption methods are not technical measures of protection. Which is true. I mean, the technical measures of protection are defined as something that controls the use of the work.
The use.
That means it controls someone that is using a copyrighted work, where a format by itself obviously does not control anyone. It needs some software on top of it, but the format itself is not in control of anything. It participates into a technical measure of protection, but it is not a technical measure of protection. And the same applies to protocols and encryption methods. What we do by asking that is just stating the obvious when you word it this way. Now, if you ask a lawyer, is a format, a protocol, or an encryption method a technical measure of protection, all of them, we've done it, all of them tell you, yes, it is. Where if you explain it beforehand, they say, obviously it's not, because it has no way to control the user. So by asking, by pointing this as an inaccuracy of the proposed implementation, we raise the concern that it could be il y a un risque d'inconstitutionnalité. It might be non-conformant to French laws, constitution. Because since the penalty for infringing these rights are very high, the law needs to be very precise. And since apparently lawyers do not know what technical measures of protection are, we certainly need to say what they are not. So that's an amendment that, according to us, is of great importance, that opens the way to what Philippe Aiguin described, many ways to slip through. And there are others, but I think Jan has more to say.
Yes, and maybe just a comment regarding the DMCA. I think there's a new trend in the hardware business right now to put everything under GPL firmwares. I guess everybody heard about the Xbox running under Linux and being the cheapest DVD Windows Media Center clone available. It happens now with the Nokia N-Gage. It means that any company that builds products that use proprietary software now can find a GPL or open source firmware that can be replaced and give interoperability used of the product. And I guess the DMCA is some kind of a benediction for all these companies that can prevent people from using their tools in a way that was not described first. Before we could put any computer under Linux, now you can put your cell phone, your video game, any product under a GPL firmware. I don't know if people know what to write. Yeah.